It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod, recorded on February 21st, 2024. And in the pod with me this time is Maryam Abudamus, who's candidate for supervisor in Napa County in District 5. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Let's begin with an opening statement. Let's imagine there are people who are not familiar with your city council service in American Canyon, not familiar with your previous run for supervisor. Give us the Maryam story.
Sure. So my name is Maryam Abudamus. I'm currently serving in my 8th year on the American Canyon City Council. I'm also an attorney. I practice family law. Something new about me is I now have a daughter who's almost 2 years old this month, and I'm pregnant with a baby boy. So we have a growing family living in American Canyon. My top three issues on the city council have been traffic, housing, and climate resiliency. And regarding traffic, I successfully negotiated the Watson Ranch Development Agreement in my first 2 years of the city council. And what I mean by that is I was the only council member appointed to that subcommittee, and we had a standing meeting every Wednesday for 3 hours. So I would go to City Hall at 9 a.m., we'd be done at noon, and then I would drive to Walnut Creek to work every single day. And we eventually got through it and got that done. Why that's important is it brought us the right-of-way for the Newell extension, which once completed will be a true parallel road to Highway 29. It also brought with it a lot of affordable housing and a diversification of housing. And what I mean by that is we have the Limos Point units, which are affordable housing units prefabricated and just flown in and put together like building blocks. They were really cool. And then diversification is it's supposed to also bring with it townhouses and condos, which are, you know, smaller units, which make them affordable by design, and also housing that is affordable by design. So what we've most recently been seeing on the market is the Harvest and Artisan subdivisions, which are selling for the high $600,000 range, which is expensive, but it's much cheaper than anything else you can find in the valley. And the reason for that is because they're like 2,000 square foot units sitting next to 4,000 square foot units, and naturally they appraise for much less. So we've been fighting the fight on traffic and housing. And now my main focus on housing is those exactly what we're doing in American Canyon is the affordable by design, because I believe our constituents are concerned about their children being able to continue living where they grew up. And I'm getting really deep into housing, and I just realized this is an opening statement, so I'm going to transition away from that and continue letting you know. So the reason why I ran for city council in 2016 is because I opened up a small office on North Kelly Road where I was practicing immigration law. And one day I left at the wrong time, and it took me 45 minutes to go that mile and a half back into American Canyon. And I was so frustrated that I decided to run for city council. And now it's the same thing for Board of Supervisors. I believe that our current representation is inadequate. There's a lot of talk and no action, and I'm running because I'm ready to get the work done.
Before we get into more on traffic and these other topics, having been in Napa, it's coming on 40 years for me. All right. It's a lot of change that I observed from my media perspective and trying to cover the news and issues and talking to people like yourself for all these years. Back then, American Canyon was very disrespected in Napa County. There's no way to, other way to put it. It wasn't a city when I came here. It became one after a while. Mm-hmm. It was the place where you kind of put things you didn't want to look at, like junkyards and whatnot. Industry to some degree, and a lot of people felt that American Canyon was more like Vallejo, more part of Vallejo and Solano County than it was of Napa County. Today, after incorporating and all the growth in the population, American Canyon is really dominant in District 5, right? It's really become a District 5 has become an American Canyon seat mm-hmm. on the Board of Supervisors. Things are very different. But do people who are living in American Canyon today and have moved in there in this last 15, 20 years even, do they feel part of Napa County? And my thinking is that maybe a lot of them don't. And then the question is, how do you solve that and connect those people more to the rest of the county's issues?
That's actually a really good question and something I've thought about a lot, because growing up, I went to Vintage. I was also the first class that went to Vintage straight out of American Canyon Middle School. So we were treated differently because we hadn't been blended into the Napa population yet. And so I was oblivious because I was, you know, young and didn't know. And it was just what we were supposed to do was go to Vintage Eye because everyone else did the classes before us. And now it's kind of like we have two, American Canyon is kind of split into two. There's the original population and then there's the new population that's come in, moved in from the Bay Area or wherever. And it feels like they don't feel like they're a part of the county for the most part. There's a lot of people that do, but for the most part, and I think part of it is because we have a lot of people commuting out of the city into the Bay Area for work. Take myself, for instance. American Canyon is predominantly young families with commuters who, you know, as parents, right? Just like me, I have two babies and I commute into Walnut Creek for work. And so it's hard to become part of any community when you're not spending enough time in it. And that's part of the whole traffic, housing, jobs balance conundrum that we've been talking about as a county for years now. So that's one way of doing it. Another thing is I think we all need to work harder at going and visiting each other. And that's not just necessarily the public, that's also the elected leaders. I think we need to do more of getting to know one another, spending time together, and becoming like more like a family or a community. If that makes sense.
It does. Yeah. So let's go back to some of these top issues. In talking about traffic, and your explanation was, which was excellent, about the Newell Road extension. Mm-hmm. Will that solve that 40 minutes to go a mile and a half problem?
No, it won't. My take on capacity is you build more and then the cars are going to find it. So it has to be taken as a package deal and it has to be looked at regionally. So we need to improve public transportation along with the Newell extension. For me, the Newell extension and that true parallel road is going to be great for us, especially in cases of an emergency, right? So in 2014 when we had that earthquake? Mm-hmm. I was still in law school at the time and I had come home to my parents' house to babysit it for the weekend because they were out of town and the earthquake happened. And my first thought was, oh my gosh, what if that causeway had collapsed? How do we get to Napa? What if you're at the Queen of the Valley Hospital and you're in American Canyon, this earthquake happened and you can't get to your hospital, what do you do? And so I've been advocating for a true parallel specifically for cases of emergencies. It's going to help with traffic mitigation, especially in the beginning before the other cars find it, right? But we also need to work on improved public transportation. And something I've advocated for a long time is having the bus, the Vine bus, drive on the shoulder, working with Caltrans to get permission. They've done it before. And it just is a matter of making that conversation happen and allowing the Vine bus to drive on the shoulder. Back in when I was still a student at Napa Valley College, so what was that, in 2005, I want to say, my car broke down and I had to take the bus to the college. And, you know, that's like a 5-mile drive. If that, even, it's a very short drive. It took me an hour back then, and that's before traffic was as bad as it is today. If we had more frequent, for instance, bus stops so that families don't have to worry about how do I get home if my kid is sick, and we had a better, like, we got the buses out of the traffic, I think more people would be inclined to use our bus system. For example, I lived in the Netherlands for a short period when I worked for a UN tribunal. We all know that Europe and its public transportation system far surpasses us, and I'm not expecting us to build a train system because I understand that their train system was built and then the communities were built. But we can come close using our bus, for example.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Mariam Aboudamous in the Berry Pod, candidate for supervisor in District 5. In terms of, like you said, in terms of expanding street capacity, the cars find it, I think you said. You build another, you add two lanes to a 2-lane road as a 4-lane road. Now there's suddenly, oh, well, we can permit more development now because there's more lanes. And so we keep countering our own intentions, it mm-hmm. seems like. As we struggle to provide affordable housing, we put up more market rate housing and it's snapped up pretty fast and the demand doesn't stop. Even when the economy slows down, we have this housing crisis. Beyond just adding more units at market rate, what do we do for the people? I was just looking at a story today about, you know, people working in the service industries at the lower end might make $35,000 a year. You cannot live anywhere on $35,000 a year if we are going to continue to pay people those kind of wages and rely on them mm-hmm. to staff our businesses. What's the answer in terms of really in terms of affordability? Is it more subsidies? Is it housing units owned by the county that are managed by the government, which people are afraid of? What's the answer for this?
So what's the, I'm just going to rephrase your question to make sure I answer what you're asking me.
I don't even
me.
Know myself what I asked.
Yeah, it was a little bit.
Big ramble.
It was a little bit convoluted. So my understanding of your question is there's people that are working in our service industry barely making, $35,000, $40,000 a year. How do they afford homeownership?
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what I was talking about. Actually, I'm an attorney, so I definitely make more than $35,000, $40,000 a year. And I was in this bracket of I made too much money to qualify for any sort of subsidy, government assistance, first-time home buyer loan, down payment assistance. But I also didn't make enough money to qualify for a mortgage because of the crazy cost of housing. It took me getting married for my husband and I to finally buy a house. And frankly, as an attorney, because our mortgage is so massive, we're living paycheck to paycheck. And people are shocked by that, right? But unfortunately, that's become the norm. And so our solution to affordable housing has been a lot of rental units instead of thinking about people wanting home ownership. And that's why I've been advocating more heavily now for, diversification of housing, things that are more affordable by design. $600,000, I still don't think you can afford at $35,000, $40,000 annually. But condos, townhouses, some kind of a starter home that can get you there. And someone who's looking for home ownership at, a $35,000, $40,000 a year salary, I believe would be willing to buy something smaller as a starter home and then eventually invest that into, their permanent home. At least that's a way to start. Mm-hmm. But this issue is not just about housing, right? It's about the economy. And why is our service industry still making $35,000, $40,000 a year when we know that nobody can live off of that? We can't live without our service industry. So I think wages also need to increase. I can't sit here and advocate for, each individual organization or entity without talking to both sides of, the table. But I think something needs to be done about wages. As I mentioned, I'm an attorney and I'm living paycheck to paycheck and I'm married. That just tells you that the cost of living has gone so high, but wages have remained the same. And that's a problem. It's something that we need to look at. And I don't necessarily think that government subsidies are going to be the answer because we also don't want to bankrupt the state, right? That's a much bigger conversation. Yeah, and I don't think you and I are going to solve that now.
Sad, but true. there's an aspect too. You mentioned having lived in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. and I often bring this up and think about it when we talk about these housing problems. People in the Netherlands and all over Europe, England, most other countries in the world, many of them don't even imagine they'll ever own any kind of real estate, because they live in places where there isn't that much to go around. These places are small. They have restrictions on growth. Their cities don't sprawl out into the countryside the way they do in large parts of the United States. And Americans seem to be addicted to this idea. You have to own your own home or you're not a success. Millions of people in other parts of the world don't even factor that in. It's like, oh, I've got a good apartment, that I'm living a good life. Are we deceiving ourselves in a place like California to think that everybody can own a home if they really want to? Because you're describing a situation that's incredibly difficult.
That's a very interesting question. I actually haven't thought about that because I have a Middle Eastern background, and in the Middle East, before you get married, you build a house on property typically that you've inherited from your dad or your grandpa or your great-grandpa, right? And you can't get married until you have a house because you want to provide security and stability for your children. It's kind of different in the United States, right? Because even once your mortgage is done and your house is paid off, you still have to pay these massive property taxes. So it's kind of like you're renting for the rest of your life. Granted, by the time, I'm old enough to retire, my property tax will be cheaper than what it costs to rent. So I think the reason why people want to own is to be able to provide, stability for their families and then be able to pass along their legacy to the next generation and leave some sort of wealth for their children, especially because times are only getting harder. They're not getting easier. Mm. Are we deceiving ourselves? Maybe. I don't necessarily... I don't know. Yeah. Honestly, I don't have the answer for you, but
sometimes it's helpful to me to think about the United States as being so big and so diverse in regions that we are like Europe. Like it's not one big.
Oh yeah, I've often said that the EU is similar to the United States, except for the EU is countries and we're individual states.
Right. And if I'm living in Kansas, I can probably buy a house.
That's true.
Right? I can have one job and come right out of college and buy a house. You just don't do that in California. Yeah, it's a different world.
That's true. I keep on seeing, that might be a deception as well. I've never lived in Kansas, so I don't know the wages there, right? I keep on seeing on my social media, for instance, these like McMansions or these castles, and it's like, this could be yours for $300,000 mm-hmm. in Texas. Well, my sister moved to Texas recently. She works remotely for a California employer, so she's doing well. But it doesn't seem like cost of living there is that much lower than it is in California.
Yeah. If it becomes like Austin is a great example. Mm-hmm. Austin prices shot through the roof because everybody wanted to be there because it was cheaper. And by going there, they made it more expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just ironic. Okay. Let's move on to some other of the key issues in the county during the supervisor's race. Everybody who runs for office in Napa has to pledge allegiance to the agricultural preserve. I'm sure you've done that, right? And yet, I keep coming back to this feeling that something has fundamentally changed with some of the recent decisions about vineyard development, and mm-hmm. the La Colline example is the easiest one to focus on, because it was so different than the sort of run-of-the-mill, everyday business situation. I think everybody listening to this is familiar with what happened, so I don't want to spend time on that. How do you feel about that decision, the supervisors upholding an appeal and denying that vineyard development?
I feel like it's a pretty frustrating decision, to be frank with you. And the reason for that is because we were in a similar situation, actually, in American Canyon. So let me use that as an example for you. We had, I think, 4 gas stations in the pipeline for a conditional use permit, and that's a ministerial process in the city, so it just goes straight to Planning Commission. They approve it and it just moves forward. The Planning Commission brought to our attention that there's 4 more gas stations in the pipeline for this, you know, tiny city. You can only have so many gas stations, and one on each corner is not conducive to anybody, especially when the governor is looking at banning the manufacturing of gas vehicles. And so what we did is we had a joint meeting with the Planning Commission where we discussed, you know, the council's priorities, and we decided to put a moratorium on gas stations until we figured out what we were going to do. There was one that was already past the application process. And so we allowed them, and that's the Circle K gas station, we allowed them to continue and proceed because it wouldn't be fair after you've gotten through the process at the very last minute to have the carpet pulled out from under you, right? So if they're in the pre-application phase, it's one thing. Lake Helene had spent, the applicant there had spent 10 years, I believe, on becoming project ready, or what's the word I'm looking for? It's escaping me. On making their project compliant, fully compliant project. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so 10 years is a lot of time to waste. And I think that came with like millions of dollars, or at least hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And so I don't think it's fair to pull the rug out from under them at that point. That applicant was planning on, you know, a retirement with his wife. And Lake Colleen was part of that retirement plan. And now, you know, after spending 10 years focusing on his retirement, he's got to do more work. And I don't think that's fair. And that's my biggest issue with it, is I've talked to our, you know, developers, and I've said to them, if, you know, our general plan said we didn't zone this property for vineyard use, or we didn't want any of what you want to build, would you waste time and money trying to fight that? They're like, no, we'll go somewhere else. And that's more fair. That's more reasonable. So the fact that these kinds of things are happening, and I think there's been more at Planning Commission that have been denied. And if that's happening, then to me, that's a major red flag that you need to change your general plan, or at least have some sort of moratorium in place until you figure out what your policy is, what you want your policy to be, until you develop something that's going to be more reasonable.
Speaking of the general plan, there's been a lot of commentary in response to questions among these candidates right now of a shorter cycle on general plan that having 10-year intervals, 20-year intervals isn't realistic in the modern day. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. The lawyer in me wants it updated a lot more frequently. The reality of it is, I don't know if it's feasible. I've been advocating for us to update the general plan since I've been elected, and we've been in the process for many years, and it's like, by the time we're finally done, it's time to update it again, is what it feels like. But I do agree that it needs to happen more frequently, and it should be more of a priority, especially for the county.
Coming back to agriculture for a moment, hillside development, and in many of those cases, extremely remote development seems to have been triggering people mostly in Napa County when they hear about whether it's a winery proposal or a vineyard or both, or anything that's going to add traffic, two-lane roads that come to a dead end up in the woods. After all the fires, of course, that's very concerning for a lot of people. General increase in activity and traffic in very rural areas. And a lot of folks will say, you know, I bought this place because I wanted to be out in the woods and left alone, not be in a touristy area, right? And I keep asking this question, and I probably will for the rest of my life, like, at what point do you start to say we're at max capacity in this particular zone or location, in this area, in this watershed, in this sensitive spot? What are your thoughts about that? Are we actually getting to that point where you have to say no a lot more often?
Well, according to our general plan, we're not getting to that point, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're not there. And that's part of why we need to update our general plan more frequently than once every 10 years, because your population changes. Sometimes what you put on paper is very different from what you see in reality. And so if our constituents are screaming at us to stop developing and stop building, there's an issue there that we need to address. My take on this is our residents have been extremely frustrated because there's so much traffic in the valley. There's so much traffic. You want to go to the grocery store, you're stuck sitting in traffic just to get to the grocery store. So if we don't address these infrastructure issues, our residents are never going to be okay with continuing to develop. We currently have space to develop, maybe more in the cities than the county itself, right? We have the space to develop, but if we don't address our infrastructure, then we're going to keep getting yelled at by our constituents. And our constituents should be our number one priority because, you know, they're the ones that are living here. They're the ones that are electing us. They're the ones that their quality of life here matters more than, you know, a tourist coming in from out of town to, you know, enjoy the weekend in the vineyards, right? Which, not to say that the tourism industry is a bad thing. It's not. It's the backbone of our economy here. Our county economy went down by 50% when the fires happened because we lost a lot of tourism. That's bad. So I don't think anybody actually comes to the Napa Valley not knowing that they're coming to wine country when they come to live here. Once you live here and you start screaming about don't build any more wineries, it's like, didn't you know you were coming to wine country? On the one hand. On the other hand, I understand that the infrastructure needs that need to be upgraded.
Yeah. And I certainly understand what you're saying about going to the grocery store and taking a long time to get across town. It sounds like a really whiny complaint when you live in such a small town. Oh, it used to take me 3 minutes. Now it takes me 8 minutes. Okay, well, it's 8 minutes still, right? And yet, we all feel that difference. And it comes from decisions about density over sprawl, right? That's been our way of avoiding encroaching into agricultural areas. We'll make the cities all be more dense. And part of that came from taking housing allocations from the state and making sure they stayed in urban areas. Can we continue to do that in this cycle of housing allocations and the next ones? Will we get to a point where you got to make tough decisions about changing those boundaries, ag boundaries?
Can we continue to build densities
and focus
in the cities,
the housing allocations in the existing cities?
I don't think I understand your question. Sorry.
the housing allocations have the county itself has avoided having to build.
You're talking about RENA?
Yes.
Okay.
RENA, about building housing units or zoning for housing units in unincorporated areas, and say let's keep urban growth in urban areas. Mm-hmm. And the cities have so far agreed to that and taken on shared that burden, as you could say. But there may come a time when
the cities run out of space.
Yeah, and that question
they will run out of space.
Yeah.
they will run out of space. And at that time, I don't know how much, how long these RENA allocations are going to be required for. That's eventually going to have to change too, right? Because in American Canyon, we've exceeded our RENA allocations and we're building like crazy. Eventually we're going to run out of room. So it's not just the infrastructure, it's also the physical space in the cities. And I don't think that it's going to be sustainable to continue these RENA allocations forever, right? Just like everything else, you know, things need to be updated, life changes, things change. For now, I think there is still space for building. And if you remember at the Napa Valley Vintners Forum, I had mentioned a couple of schools that were shut down. That would be great for, you know, some kind of residential units instead. We have space in American Canyon. We have a lot of open vacant lots on Broadway, actually, still on Highway 29. That being said, our infrastructure definitely needs to keep up with it as well. Yeah. And I think it would be very helpful if we work together as a region to work on public transit. Because if, you know, I would rather have somebody drive me to work so that I can just be working in the car or, you know, listening to or reading a book or doing something different, right? And we used to, when we were school children, school aged, I used to have to take the bus at 7 a.m. to get to Vintage. That hour that it would take us to get to Vintage High, I would do my homework. I would hang out with my friends. Like, it just felt like I got so many more hours in a day. And I don't think I'm alone in feeling that way, but I also can't afford to spend 2 hours on the bus when being in my car can take me, you know, 45 minutes. 45 minutes. It's still traffic.
It's the difference.
And it's also your mental health too, right? Like you said, it sounds kind of whiny to say it used to take me 3 minutes, now it takes 8 minutes. It's not about the 8 minutes. It's about being like sitting in your car that slow. Sometimes it's just, I mean, it takes a lot more focus to drive in traffic too, right? Because you're stop and go and stop and go. And it's just stressful, especially if you have somewhere to be. And in this day and age, we're so busy. We're so busy, whether it's I'm trying to get my child to school or I'm trying to get to work on time or I don't want to miss my son's soccer game or whatever it is, right? We're so busy that sitting in that traffic just makes the stress fester.
Yeah. Does not improve your life.
No, it doesn't.
One last topic, I think, is all we may have time for, and this is a key and critical topic for the county, and that's finding the money to fund the ongoing wildfire mitigation measures. There is no identified source. There was a ballot measure that was tried and it didn't work. How do we achieve as a county the funding for that ongoing effort?
That's a great question. So I've heard a lot that we can't use the general fund to fund fire mitigation. I don't necessarily believe that that's true. I'm not saying that that's the best source. I'm just saying I don't believe that that's true necessarily, because my experience has been, as an elected leader, you set your policy through your budget, right? So if my top priority is fire mitigation, I'm going to find money in the budget to make that happen. That being said, the ballot initiative that didn't pass, I've had people say to me that fire mitigation doesn't resonate in American Canyon. And that's why it didn't pass. I don't think that's true. I think it didn't pass because there was not very good outreach on that ballot initiative. I'm an elected official in American Canyon. No proponents of that initiative had ever reached out to me. I didn't see any signage. A lot of people just didn't know what that was. So that doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't resonate. There just wasn't enough voter education. I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to another ballot initiative for fire mitigation measures. And to be honest with you, I think the residents of District 5 would be supportive of it as well.
Mariam Abudamos, candidate for District 5 supervisor, and give you a minute or two for a wrap-up closing statement.
Well, if you haven't voted yet and you have questions, please feel free to reach out to me. My website is www.vote4mariam.com. If you send me an email through that, it comes directly to my cell phone. I'm the homegrown candidate. I've lived here my entire life and I'm trying to raise my family here. I have no intentions of going anywhere else, and I'm genuinely doing this because I want to make a difference in this community. I want to leave it better than I found it for my children and future generations to come. I'd love to hear from every single one of you, and I would appreciate your support.
And when is your baby due?
My baby's due on June 15th.
Congratulations, and hope everything goes perfectly well.
Thank you so much.
Mariam Abudamos.
Just so you know, if when my baby's due, if I win this election, I wouldn't be taking office until January 2025, so I'd already be done with maternity leave as well.
Fair point. I wasn't too worried about that personally, but it's a good point. Thank you for being in the Berry Pod.
It's my pleasure.
And this episode was recorded on February 21st, 2024.
You're listening to the Berry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.